The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Happy hour. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Diana Clark. Happy to see you all here. I guess I'm already happy, so we can go home. So I stumbled upon a couple of verses recently, and these are verses that are in the Buddhist literature, or I guess we could call them scriptures, from thousands of years ago. And these verses are from somebody named Revata, and this person became enlightened, and these verses are something kind of associated with at the end of his life. He described some parts of his life or something. This is a collection called the Theragata, and that is a collection of awakening poems from men, and then the Therigata is the awakening poems from women. And the ones from women are the oldest known literature attributed to women in the human race, I guess, right? So, but what I'm going to talk about is from the Theragata, from men. And when I read this, I felt inspired. And then I just started to think about, what is it like to be inspired? Or what do we need inspiration? And what is inspiring? And maybe one reason why I felt inspired is because it was in contrast that sometimes with the media, and I'm feeling the opposite of inspired. Whatever that is, I don't know what the word is exactly, but I don't feel like, oh, this is necessarily something I want to emulate, or that brings opens my heart and makes me feel some optimism and joy or things like this. This is just my experience. Not everybody's having this experience necessarily, but just reminded me the importance of having somebody to look up to, having somebody we admire, having somebody we respect. And then I was reminded of this, a meeting I had been to a number of years ago with somebody that I had a tremendous amount of respect for. And in this meeting, the way that we were sitting, I could see him, but there were some other people that I couldn't see, but he could. And somebody that I couldn't see spoke to the person whom I respected and could see. And the way that I saw his demeanor completely change and shift, and I couldn't hear what this other person had said, and I thought, what happened? And then I realized, according to the response, that the person was talking about some difficulty they were having. And the person that I could see, they're kind of like softened and opened and turned completely towards this other person and really addressed them and paid attention. And I felt like so inspired, like what to do to acknowledge that other people in the meeting and other people who are having difficulties or saying things, just to turn towards them and meet them with compassion and care and respect, kindness. I felt so inspired by that. It was completely, the person that I respect, he didn't know that I was watching him. He wasn't trying to put on a show or anything. He was just responding to what somebody else had said. So getting back to these verses from Revata, I kind of had that similar feeling like, oh, this is inspiring. So Revata was a monk. In the early Buddhist tradition, there is an emphasis on monasticism. The way we interpret it in the West, we don't emphasize that, but there is an emphasis on monasticism. So, and the reason why I say that is because the opening line is, since I've gone forth from home life into homelessness. So that's like a standard phrase that we see over and over and over again in the Buddhist scriptures. So to go forth into homelessness is to become a mendicant and to essentially leave behind your more conventional life that you had. So we could think of it like, since I ordained. So here we go. This is Revata. Since I've gone forth from home life into homelessness, I'm not aware of any intention that is ignoble and hateful. May these beings be harmed. May these beings be killed. May these beings suffer. I'm not aware of having any such intentions in all this long period of time. I've been aware of loving kindness, measureless and well-developed, gradually built up just as the Buddha taught. I'm a friend and comrade to all, compassionate to all beings. Developing a mind of loving kindness and always delighting in harmlessness. Immovable, unshakable, I gladden the mind. I develop loving kindness and compassion, which bad people do not cultivate. Here's just the beginning here. He doesn't have hateful thoughts. May these beings be harmed, slaughtered, or suffer. I think often we don't have such obvious, terrible thoughts, but sometimes we may, let's just say we're not filled with loving kindness and compassion. And I felt inspired by this, that here's somebody who's saying that this is what his life is filled with, loving kindness and compassion. And so that's why we do this practice, is to help create the conditions that we can have that too, that we can experience loving kindness and compassion and be expressing it. So that we can be that person, that when another person is in distress, having difficulties, we can be the one that turns towards them, responds to them with an open heart, with loving kindness. And maybe we can inspire somebody else. So for me, this is both that the motivation, I want to be to model behavior that supports other people. And I'm inspired by this too, that, you know, if humans can do this. There's a number of people that I know that have lots and lots of meditation practice, but there's just this gentleness and softness about them, and this warmth and care. So here we are in our own way. We're going to be working towards this, developing and cultivating this warm-heartedness and sense of care and compassion for others. So in this loving kindness practice, we're going to start with a benefactor. And that's a word that, you know, I kind of think of as a little bit unusual word, but somebody for whom that we feel inspired by, perhaps, or somebody for whom we have a lot of respect or a lot of care or warmth, somebody for whom it's easy to feel loving kindness toward. There's no reason why this has to be difficult and complicated. I'm going to start where it's easy. If you can't bring to mind somebody that feels easy to have loving kindness for, then go ahead and choose a kitten or a puppy or some other being for whom you can feel your heart quiver or soften or something. Maybe that's why there's all those cat videos, is to kind of help us. Right, there must be a reason, right? Because they're endearing, right? There's something about that, right? So with this practice, we'll start with the easy being. And there's three elements. One is to bring the being to mind, visualize them, or in some way have a sense of them being with you. The second is to set an intention for sending loving kindness, care, respect, sending or cultivating, developing, whichever verb makes sense to you. And we support that intention of cultivating loving kindness with phrases. These phrases are a way for the mind to keep coming back to the intention. They're a way that helps create the conditions in which this loving kindness can develop. And then the third element is what's a felt sense of what's happening in your body, kind of your interior experience, so in your mind as well. Just checking in and letting there be ease and warmth, if that's what arises. No guarantees that's what's going to arise, but hopefully we're creating the conditions. Then after we've done loving kindness with a benefactor, then we'll extend it out to ourselves. Of course, we need loving kindness too, deserve loving kindness. So first we'll begin with taking an alert, upright posture. And take a posture that has some ease and relaxation. There's no need to be in physical discomfort. If during the meditation you need to shift your posture, that's perfectly fine. And let's take three long, slow, deep breaths. And then returning the breath to normal, trusting that the body knows how to breathe. We don't need to manipulate it or change it. And then we'll just check in with different areas of the body to see if there's some obvious tension that can be softened or relaxed or let go of. You don't have to make or force the tension to leave. We're just going to bring our attention to them, and perhaps that alone will be sufficient. So you can check in with your eyes. Often we hold tension there. Around our eyes, behind our eyes. And the jaw. And the neck, it can be helpful to really just very slightly to tuck the chin, just a really, really minor movement that opens up a little bit of space in the neck. And the shoulders, allowing them to slide down the back. Arms and the hands. And the back. Perhaps with the exhale there can be a certain letting go or relaxation. Chest and belly. Feel the pressure of the chair or the cushion on your body, allowing gravity to support you. Checking in with the legs and the feet. And then we'll do some mindfulness of breathing. Just rest your attention on the sensations of breathing. The movement of the abdomen, the movement of the chest, or the feeling of air going in and out of the nose, whichever is the easiest or most relaxing, most supportive. Just choose one and rest your attention there. It is likely that your attention will drift away. It doesn't have to be a problem, just notice. And very gently, with kindness, bring your awareness back to the sensations of breathing. When you find that you're lost in thought, you can simply, quietly, just begin again. So this paying attention to the sensations of breathing can always be a refuge or a place to return to if you're feeling overwhelmed by what's arising or confused or for whatever reason the loving kindness meditation doesn't feel like the right thing at the right time, at this time. You can always come back to this practice, the mindfulness of breathing. So then to begin loving-kindness practice, bring to mind the benefactor or lovable being. See if you can visualize this person or being. Maybe you can sense or feel some warmth or tenderness in the heart center. When this person comes to mind, maybe not too, that's okay. And then to support the cultivation of loving kindness, the development of loving kindness, we'll say the phrases, which you can repeat silently after me. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. If these phrases feel awkward or somehow don't resonate, you're more than welcome to change them, modify them into phrases that do feel comfortable for you. Feel like a sincere wish of care, warmth, respect, loving kindness, love. And of course, the phrases don't need to be in English. They could be in any language that is the language of your heart. So again, bringing the benefactor to mind. And if you find that there is some warmth or spaciousness in the heart center, or however you would experience or are experiencing loving kindness, you can just allow that to be as big as it would like to be. It doesn't need to be any bigger than it is. You don't have to make it or force it, but just allow. Then returning to the phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. So now I'll be silent for a little bit, so you can go at your own pace and with your own words. Now we'll expand our loving kindness to include ourselves, which for some people is not as easy as extending loving kindness towards someone who has supported us or helped us or who is adorable and fluffy. So you can begin by having a felt sense of yourself. And whatever way is easiest or makes sense, visualize yourself as you are now, or perhaps as you were as a child, or maybe just tune into the felt physical sense of being here, or maybe a sense of your interior life, whichever seems the easiest and the most supportive for cultivating loving kindness. And we can allow this practice to change us, to affect us. See if you can notice if there's some hesitation or a slight resistance to being affected. So again, bring in a felt sense of yourself to mind. Maybe checking in with the heart center or wherever else you might be feeling loving kindness. And if you're not feeling loving kindness, that's okay. There's no guarantees. If you're feeling the opposite of loving kindness, see if you can open your awareness to be really big and just allow these non-loving kindness, let's call them, and just allow them to be there, but maybe not to overtake your entire experience. See if you can have the experience be bigger, your awareness be bigger. So to support loving kindness for ourselves, we'll just change the pronoun in the phases. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. See if you can connect to the intention, the sincere wish for your own well-being. So if you can care, take care of yourself, extend warmth and kindness towards yourself. Kind of bathing yourself in some warmth and care, respect, love. And if you find that difficult, can you have appreciation for your intention to have intentions of loving kindness? We start where we are. It doesn't have to be different. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Now I'll be silent for the next few minutes. And then to end this meditation, feel the pressure of the chair, the cushion against your body. Feel your feet on the ground. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So with these meditation practices, we're creating the conditions for it to be more likely that we'll respond and just behave in a way that comes from a sense of warmth, loving kindness and care, as opposed to dismissiveness or maybe not even seeing others. Something I appreciate very much about this practice is that we can cultivate this. We don't have to be born with just this innate sense of like, oh, isn't everything great? I don't know if people are born that way, but this idea that it can be cultivated. It can be developed. There's lots of research these days. It's kind of a hot topic in neuroscience, is how there is so much more neuroplasticity than we ever realized. And they can measure, you know, long-term meditators as well as short-term meditators, you know, differences in brain activity and other physiological markers. So whether you felt some loving kindness arise during this meditation, either for the benefactor or for yourself, or maybe you didn't, right? We're just creating the conditions, we're setting our intentions to develop this. But the activity of bringing the mind back repeatedly to this intention is enough to start creating the changes, start making it more and more likely that we will respond with some spaciousness and some warmth. Or that maybe it's not even a response, maybe just warmth and love arises spontaneously. And with that, as it starts to become more and more evident in our lives, we experience it more and more, maybe we can become somebody for whom it inspires others. Maybe the way that we behave, way that we treat ourselves, the way that we treat others, maybe it supports others without our ever having to say something. Maybe they don't even know us. Maybe they just see us. And in this way, we can make our communities richer, more resilient, more caring, which then makes it easier to feel loving kindness, which then supports the community as well as supports us. So this is my kind of subversive grassroots efforts to make the world have world peace. So now we have some time for some questions or comments. If you'd like to have questions about the practice, the instructions, about these verses, Revita's enlightenment verses, or perhaps something else, you're welcome to ask them. Maybe I'll say this one verse again. I've been aware of loving kindness, measureless and well developed, gradually built up, just as the Buddha taught. Measureless and well developed, gradually built up. That's what we're doing. It's developing, kind of building It's not easy, right, to always to spontaneously, but to change and be radically different. Right? These are just small steps in a certain direction that add up. Yes, Kristen.
I'll ask a general question.
Thanks.
I have to make them. So this is a very general question. I've been on retreat for a week and I just got back. But it struck me like some of the meditation instructions that we had like towards the end of the retreat seemed like more like retreat meditation instructions and not like instructions that you would use kind of for daily living. And I was wondering if you could talk about that, because kind of like, you know, well, you know what I mean. And what are the instructions more for just, you know, getting along in your day and being more present?
So do you want to tell me a little bit more? What gave you the sense that they were retreat instructions?
Well, you know, towards the end of the retreat, it was more like kind of understanding your bigger place and the breaking kind of down the boundaries between what we feel is like our solid self, and that doesn't seem very practical for when your eyes are open and you're walking around interacting with people, I guess is my thought. Like, it was fine to do it there, but I just remember when I was getting it, I was thinking, well, I'm not going to use this after I leave, so I was kind of be interested in how that fits in with the bigger scheme of things.
Yeah, so maybe I'll make some general comments. First, kudos to going on retreat. I know it's not always easy to spend days and days, a week in silence, meditating all day. It's not easy. Yeah, so kind of what's something that they don't, it's not overtly spoken about often, but it's definitely there, is there's two, in these practices, I'm just using general broad statements here, right? There's lots and lots of exceptions. I'm just using some broad general things. There's perspectives, practices, orientations for finding more and more freedom in our lives. And we can define freedom kind of in the Buddhist way of awakening and enlightenment, or we could define it in just having more ease in our life. You can choose whatever makes sense to you. And often before we can, these teachings on finding more freedom are very much embedded in letting go. Letting go and ideas that we have about how the world should be or how we are or what should have been or letting, it's amazing all the things that you can let go that often it's not until you're on retreat you kind of discover. So there's that big, giant, broad category. And then there's this other big, giant, broad category, healing. So many of us have some healing that needs to be done before we can do some of the deepest letting go or having the deepest understandings or the deepest insights. And so they often happen in parallel, or like maybe there's maybe a whole bunch of healing needs to happen and there isn't a lot of freedom as much as just healing, which is in its own way is freedom too. So often what happens on retreats is that as the mind quiets down, especially after a few days, then you can start to see things with a little more clarity when we are starting to kind of let go of our assumptions of how the world is or the assumptions of how we are, some of the obscuration, some of the busyness of the mind as that is calmed down, we just start to see things more clearly. And so sometimes the teachings are pointing to things that are a little bit more subtle, because sometimes we can't see them when our mind is busy with life, all these other life. So I kind of gave you two reasons. One is sometimes it's more about healing and just taking care of, you know, all of us have wounds of some nature. I think it's not possible to become an adult without them. And then some of it is pointing towards, once the mind is quieted, to point towards some more of the things that are subtle. I think that's some of the difference. Does that make sense? Yes.
Sort of a silly question, regarding the phrases we say. So the last one, may you live with ease. Is that similar to when, you know, like we say all the time, right, take it easy?
Oh, this is fantastic. I never thought about this. You know, I think this is kind of the beauty of it, is we get to interpret this how we want. Whatever feels like a heartfelt expression of caring and warmth towards somebody. But that, take it easy. Yeah, this is a good question, Bhupal. I'm not sure that I... What do we mean when we say take it easy? It kind of means like stay relaxed, right? Don't get too uptight about... What was that?
Hang loose.
Oh, yeah, hang loose. I love this. I think that's fun. I think you can interpret it however you want. And even if it doesn't make any sense, you can choose another one. I can tell you what the way that I was holding on it, thinking about this, is just mine, and you don't have to adopt this. I was often when I this, may you live with ease, I think about without oppression. Without, you know, sometimes, like, yeah, maybe I'll just use that general word, oppression. And however we experience that, or whatever way it shows up in our lives. So that's the way that I was thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that this is, I don't think it's on, can you?
It's on. It's still on.
Yeah?
Yeah, but she didn't sound very amplified.
No.
The green light's on.
Boop, boop, boop. Yeah?
Yeah.
When I often struggle with guided meditations because I find that when I meditate at home or just in silence, then I find the focusing on the breath the most helpful tool just for me and my particular monkey mind. And so I love to do love and kindness meditations, and I try time and time again, and I find I come up with this sort of the same struggle, which is that I don't have that sort of same physical anchor to come back to, that same kinesthetic anchor to come back to. Anchor, maybe too hard of a word, but and something I've played with in the past, I'm a teacher and I have a 3-year-old, and when I've taught children to do this, what seems to help them, which is what I end up doing, is whoever you're holding, you imagine that person or that being sort of emanating the characteristic that you're thinking of. And so that's what's come as close to working or, you know, feeling good to me as possible. But I'm wondering if you could speak to that, or if anybody else has any tricks that they have found helpful.
So I want to see if I understand. So rather than saying phrases, you're imagining the person for whom you're developing loving kindness to feel, to be happy. You're just imagining being happy. And then what's like the sensations in your body or the felt sense of that? Is it?
It depends, because oftentimes it comes with a physical, they're doing something, right? So if I'm thinking of my daughter and I'm imagining her happy, I'm imagining her laughing or and playing, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
And then what's your response?
Yeah. Then I can sort of feel that, you know, feel a warmth.
Some joy maybe arises. I think that's fantastic. If you found a way that to kind of help support this feeling of warmth and care and maybe even joy, I think that's fantastic. This doesn't have to be any particular subscription, and it doesn't have to be in this particular way. It's kind of it's kind of traditional what I'm teaching here, but you'll find there's so many permutations. There is absolutely nothing here about doing it right. It's just about cultivating this feeling of warmth and care for another person. Because not in addition to loving kindness, often there's compassion practices too, where we imagine not only the person laughing, for example, but we may acknowledge some of the suffering they have in their lives, right? All of us have a certain amount of difficulty, stress, suffering. Then that is kind of when a sense of love meets suffering, it turns into compassion. And so you would have a maybe visualize, rather than your daughter laughing, maybe when she skins her knee or something like this would be a different feeling. So what's my point here? Is that we can just use our visualization or use phrases, or we could also just tune into the felt sense in the body of radiating loving kindness. So I talked about there's three elements, and so you could emphasize any of those three, drop the other two, and you can personalize any of them as well. Does that make sense?
Hello. My thing is that I can never focus just one person. A bunch of them come from there. They keep coming. And I'm always kind of going there. And then you say, go back to you, right? The may I be safe, may I be happy, and so on. And then I get, am I doing the right thing? I think I am, because I'm doing that so for so long, you know. And then today, I don't know what happened. I was so quiet, not moving at all, and just kind of everything disappeared. I was not here anymore. I don't know where I went. Everything got melted away. And is that okay to think about everybody? Even the bad people that make me suffer?
Yeah, this is not uncommon. For this is when we are sending loving kindness towards an individual, often the opposites arise. Either the people who it's not easy to feel love towards, or that time that person is really angry, that kind of comes up too. This is a part of the process. It's often when we have the intention for the mind to go here, we notice how much it's not there. And this is a natural part, and this is kind of like a type of cleansing, a type of when things come up and we don't get all tangled with them, they just kind of come up and pass away.
One little thing. The people that hurt me in the past, I forgive them verbally in my mind. They are doing what they could do. They don't know that they hurt me. You know, so I forget them. I forgive them, actually. But then this one little person that's keep coming back. I keep forgiving. And not disappearing anymore. It's every so often, can pass like 3 months, okay, and then suddenly, pow. It's, oh my God. Until when? I have to be doing this, you know?
Yeah, right. This is something that happens, again, when we set our mind to do something in particular. This part of the power of meditation is not actually meditating. It's just noticing all the stuff that's happening that we wouldn't notice. Just like, right, if there's a stream that's moving, a body of water that's moving really, really slowly, maybe you don't even notice that it's straight until you put a stick in, and then you can see, oh yeah, there's a little wake. So you can see, oh, the water is moving. In the same way, kind of meditating is like the stick, and then we start to notice, oh yeah, there is all this other movement happening, these other types of thoughts. I think it's fine.
The other thing about the to live with ease, on the past they would say, free from pain or free from suffering, because suffering is a heavy word. Live with ease is so much better. I love that. And I don't like happy in the beginning. I like happy in the end. it's a combination of all the things before, and then you're happy. Once you're happy in the beginning, you don't care about the rest, you know? And I think the rest is more important than be happy.
So you get to do, this is the beauty of it, you get to do however way you'd like. Okay, so we're just a few minutes after 7, and I want to respect your time, so Thank you all, and may you live with ease and hang loose and take it easy.